WFNC, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gao Media station, ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back. Hour number two starts right now. Usual Suspects. ESPN 97.5 on a Tuesday in the big city. Tropical storm brewing. Rain.
Does it get a name? Do tropical storms get a name? They do, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think once they reach a certain level, they get a name.
Because I know a depression doesn't get a name, right? It's just a depression.
Yep. Not enough people
But the storm gets a name. So I wonder what name this storm is going to get.
Should ask the sports map weather. What's his name?
Big Uzi Nerd.
Big Uzi Nerd.
Uzi Nerd is his new name now? Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah. Big Uzi Nerd.
Big Uzi Nerd.
Give us the update.
Yeah.
Tweet at him.
Steven, come on. You're listening to the show. So
I
want to
know what the name of the tropical depression is. Or storm, I should say.
I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but as another kind of a spinoff of last night's game, they were talking about the fact that Greg Williams is a no-nonsense guy. He's not afraid to bench guys. He's benched some of the guys on the team, including Jamal Adams last night. Adams confirmed he was benched. His response was also the fact that they were questioning, once he was benched, he went into his bio on social media and removed the Jets, and everybody got all hell-bent on why and what's going on, and he basically said he was trying to keep the outside noise from getting to him, but the bottom line is they said, you know, he's a young player, these things are going to happen, but I give Greg Williams credit, the fact that if you don't perform at the level you're supposed to perform, you'll sit down until you are going to do it right. And
if you don't take those cheap shots that he wants you to take,
then you're also not going to get the cash.
I was thinking about that all game. And every time something would happen, because of what OBJ said about finding out once he got to the Browns where Williams was, and then obviously went to the Jets, but people in the locker room saying, oh yeah, he wanted us to take cheap shots against you. Such a bad look. And how that just kind of, it was an issue, but it really was never made into a bigger deal than it probably should be because it's hearsay. But if you got players telling you that, I feel like the league should have investigated this more. Yeah, am I the only one that feels that way?
I don't know, but this is what it sounded like if you wanted to hear what OBJ said.
Like in preseason, like nobody in the NFL is really out to do stuff like that. I had players on this team telling me that that's what he was telling them to do, take me out of the game, and it's preseason, so... You just know who he is. Just the man. That's the man. Call him the players.
Yeah, and that seemed to be, you know, it got a little bit of run, and we talked a little bit about it when it first came out, but I still don't feel like that it was maybe made to be as big. This is the guy who was involved in Bountygate. Mm-hmm. This is the guy who now is being accused of this again, and you've had players on a team where he was just last year saying, yeah, absolutely, he told us to hit. And then, of course, he comes out and goes, well, if you look at the play where he got hurt, it was a low tackle, it was this, that, and the other. Yeah, but that doesn't change the fact that people are confirming what you said. I'm surprised that the NFL didn't come out and say, we're going to launch a full investigation, because that's pretty serious.
Or at least have given him a phone call.
Because of the fact that whole Bountygate thing became the never-ending story of over a season worth of back and forth until they levied their suspensions and how they were going to handle the whole thing. And this isn't the first time we've heard these kind of things about a guy like Greg Williams. For as much credit as we gave him for the defensive scheme he had last night and how effective it was, I think there's a fine line between pushing your guys and going over the line too far. And he's gone there in the past. I don't think he should have engaged in any conversation with OBJ. He should have just said, look, that's water under the bridge. He can think whatever he wants. I know the facts. Let's move forward. But he engaged. And he started with Odell who? When they asked him about it during the week. And so when Odell Beckham Jr. was asked after the game about Greg Williams, his first thing was, who? Because of the fact that he set himself up for this. He should just be able to wash his hands clean of it, walk away, and say, hey, I'm just worried about, in the Patriots way, I'm just worried about our next opponent, instead of engaging in it. And then everybody had to see his reaction on the touchdown, and it was great because OBJ was soaking it up, and you knew he was ticked off.
Yeah, well, I'm just, excuse me, like I said, I felt like this should have been looked into a little more, and it surprised me that it didn't, but maybe the NFL didn't take it serious. I don't know. But if I'm OBJ, I'm certainly going to the NFL and saying, hey, are we going to allow this? Because now I'm finding out this is – I'm not going to say which teammates told me because, you know, snitches get stitches. But I'm going to say, hey, there are people that you could investigate anonymously and talk to and not release that information, but find out that this is, in fact, what he said.
And he can probably tell – he can do that without listing names. And they could put their – you know, NFL, they're not dumb. They could figure out which players have played for Greg Williams and where they were.
The thing. So when they asked him – they asked Jonathan Vilma, who's now on ESPN, analyzing college and pro football.
And he was a part of that.
And he was a part of all of it. And he was – he's still, to this day, a staunch supporter of Greg Williams. He denies Bounty Gate. He's a big fan. But you know that for every one of those players like Jonathan Vilma, there are guys out there that change teams the following year or, like this Jets situation now, didn't play the way Greg Williams expected to play, that either has an axe to grind or has just a little bit of a truth serum enough to say, hey, wait a minute. I was in meeting rooms when this and that was discussed.
Yep.
So it'll
protecting the shield, though. Somebody texted the show and said, Barry, where'd you get your shirt? I'm assuming they're watching on the stream. Gooseworks is the name of the place. They're on Instagram. Gooseworks Screen Printing. So there you go. That's where
you have it.
LU Dillon also texted again. Also, Barry, I'm not a bodybuilder. I'm a power lifter. Also, Dillon, I think you overestimated how much I cared about the difference between the two. He said, I train every day from 11 to 1. That way I don't miss anything good on ESPN. Well, we appreciate you, bud.
Appreciate you, bud. Just
busting chops. That's all.
You want to get Alex's call? He wants to get in here on this Greg Williams OBJ situation. Alex, what's up?
Hey, guys. Is Greg Williams one of those defensive coordinators that up in the booth, or is he on the sidelines?
He's on the sidelines.
Okay, so you're telling me that Baker Mayfield could accidentally throw a pass in the area of Greg Williams and that Odell Beckham Jr. or maybe somebody bigger could accidentally just truck Greg Williams on the sideline. That could accidentally happen, right?
Sure. That absolutely could happen.
Okay. I've been wondering about that. Same thing with, like, in baseball, whenever somebody gets intentionally hit, I'm telling you straight up, if I don't agree with the way that it went down, my next at-bat, that bat's going to get real slippery. It might slip out of my hands. It might go towards the pitcher. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
But there's a check and balances to this thing, and, like, that's crazy, man. This guy potentially ending somebody's career, and I don't know, man. Check him.
Yeah, you know, appreciate the call, Alex. Look, that also goes to the Barkley story a year ago where he said, look, if there was someone either on the bench or a fan that was lipping off like Drake or, you know, someone that on the other team that had a lot to say, they would intentionally make sure a ball went to the sidelines right in that area, and Charles would just throw his whole body as if he was trying to save the ball just so that he could get a free shot at whoever it was. You know, stranger things have happened. Obviously, you would think that Williams would have guys that are on his team that were going to come to his defense. I thought that what was ironic, though, was on social media last night was Browns fans going, with as good as the Jets defense played, with as bad a roster as they had last night, do you think that if he took the head coaching job that Freddie Kitchens still would be coaching this offense and this team would be better off? I heard from a lot of people around that Brown situation that said that if Greg Williams got that head job, basically almost everybody on the staff was heading for the hills. They just...
Yeah, I don't think Greg Williams is liked all that much.
I think you're right.
Did you see where the Jets chose not to put his press conference on their website?
No.
Because when this all went down late last week, he got into it with the reporters, and he was talking about the fact that, well, all you got to do is look at Odell Beckham's, like, he's basically questioning Odell's skill set and saying, well, if he was so good, why did the Giants trade him? And got into it with reporters over Dirty. So the turns out, I didn't realize this, but it turns out Jets normally they'll put all those press conferences on their website. Yeah. They just wrote an article but didn't post the video of this one.
I'm actually on the Jets email, and they totally did that. They totally eliminated the part because he was just saying, look, that reporter was saying, OBJ, you know he's a dynamic player. And he responded like this.
Is it discouraging on some level, though? He's one of the most dynamic players in the league for him to even.
That's your opinion?
He's one of the
what's New York's opinion? The Giants' opinion? What did the Giants do? So that's not a question for me.
Now here's another question. Did anybody interview him after the game last night? After he got torched by OBJ and they did what they
that's
did.
A good question.
Because I'd be interested to see what he had to say last night after the game.
Was there any post game? Do you know, Nick? That'd be good.
Maybe we can dig it up. Yeah, Greg Williams after the game last night. Maybe we can try and find it because I'd be really curious to see.
I thought that's where it came from, but I could be wrong.
I think that was leading up.
That was him being petty. That never got aired on their website.
Yeah I got to check that out. Let me look.
So we'll look for that. We got some time.
Somebody asked us, where'd it go? They have an Astros question that we'll get to next segment. But what they wanted to know is, if Tucker keeps swinging a hot bat, do you keep Tucker and Straw on the playoff roster versus Diaz and Jake? So we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Yeah, we can get to that. We can also get to that game last night and how well the Astros pitched, if you want to get into that.
I hate you.
All right, as we head to break, I do want to remind you that the Raconteurs are coming to Houston. Singer-songwriter Jack White and his dynamic group are heading to H-Town Saturday, October 5th. It's a foursome that's mapped out an extensive North American tour, including a stop at the Revention Music Center, and ESPN 97.5 wants to send you and a guest to the show. Caller 12 right now, 713-780-3776. You win two tickets to the concert. Go out and see the Raconteurs. And if you don't win them, you can get them by getting tickets at LiveNation.com. Caller 12 right now, 713-780-3776. Good luck, and we'll be back in just mere minutes. ESPN 97.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, rolling through hour number two, 3-hour show. Excuse me. It is ESPN 97.5 and The Usual Suspects. We appreciate you taking us along for the ride, wherever you may be in this rainy Houston city, as we had thrown out the question and you guys as suspects came in droves to give us the answer. It is now Tropical Storm Imelda.
Yes.
So we'll see how it goes. But Steven Uzek was definitely saying the biggest fear for Houstonians should be the amount of rain. And also I heard some of the local weather forecasters this morning saying that you would hope that if it does bring a lot of rain, that it's spread out, because we know that Houston doesn't drain well. And if the same area gets it twice in a 2 or 3 day span, it could get ugly in terms of flooding. So keep an eye on that for flood insurance reasons and for your house and other things.
Yeah, I saw a tweet that says some of the effect. Oh, Richard V tagged us on it. It's from Justin Stapleton. Mm-hmm. And he just said, basically, the track impacts heavy rain mainly south of I-10 and east of 45. Potential for flash flooding over the next 48 hours. So.
Okay.
That's probably the place where you have to be the most worried. And thanks to, we got tons of folks telling us that it was Imelda, which is a stupid name. Unless your name is Imelda, and then it's pretty cool. But what a dumb name.
The only Imelda
for a
I ever
storm.
Remember was Imelda Marcos.
Yeah.
And she just was known for having a bunch of shoes.
And having sex with a dictator?
Well, that too.
Yeah. You know. Okay.
Well, I chose the positive. But yeah, okay, whatever, you know, we all are fans of shoes in
that.
Our own way.
Yeah, we
Nick evidently, according to LU Dillon, likes the high heeled version.
That's true.
And we like the Jordan.
Speaking of, we haven't discussed the new Jordans. Have you? You've seen them? You like them? Would you wear them? The 34s, right?
Yeah, they're okay.
They're not ugly.
They're not ugly.
Not
but
like
I don't.
They have
I
been
wouldn't hoop in them.
Okay.
And I'm also just still on the fence about whether I would just sport them. I would rather sport. I think
we're the opposite.
I think the Jordans that, to me, I will always wear were the ones when Michael still played, when all the ones were just the legit Jordans.
Actually, Jose Partida and I were talking about this. I think up to about 14. After the 14s, it was like, But up to about 14, I would wear those with casual clothes or whatever. I would never really hoop in Jordans. I don't think they're good for playing basketball.
I've told you that. They've never been comfortable.
Yeah. But I don't know about these. They're not ugly. I don't think they're ugly. They're kind of futuristic looking, which is the way shoes have gone.
Sure.
But I do think they're a better looking Jordan than have been in the past.
Now, it's interesting, too, because of the fact that Zion Williamson is going to be the number one endorser of the brand Jordan now, along with Russell Westbrook, that maybe they change it a little bit in trying to get it to more of a performance shoe, because they got a lot of pressure based on what happened at Duke and the fact that he blew out a Nike, that whoever got that Zion deal, it's a great thing to get him signed on the dotted line, but now you're going to have to really, because he's going to put some stress and pressure on those shoes. It's going to have to be performance as well as cosmetically a good-looking shoe. So we'll see if Zion, I know that he did an appearance. I think he was wearing the new Jordans, but I don't know that that's what he's going to play in.
Ah.
So that'll dictate a lot, too, because I'm telling you right now, when they got to the team Jordan and all the different looks, I think the new Westbrook shoe had some better cushioning, but overall, I don't know that Jordan's ever had a really cushioned performance shoe. It was more about how badass they looked when he wore them on the court.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, right? Like, I remember the first pair of Jordans I ever had was the Sixes, and that was when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I hooped in them once and was like, okay. And we used to play all the time in high school. Like me and my brother Dante, we would just go. We would get up at like 7 in the morning, and we wouldn't come back until dark. And we just all day, one day, and playing in those Jordans, I was like, nope, these are not for the court. Nope.
Like the ones were that's as narrow, I mean, as thin of a sole as you're going to find next to, like, Chucks and some of the early Dr. J Converse, where it was just that thin, hard rubber sole. But, yeah, I mean, from a three-quarter standpoint of, like, the comfortable cut, I like the three-quarters of the threes and the fours and things like that. But they were never really cushioned the way I wanted them to be.
Heavy.
So.
And then, I mean, for air,
true.
Jordan shoes, a lot of those were really heavy, too.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, a little bit bulky.
All right. Somebody wanted to know, Barry, have you seen the new Alec Baldwin roast? And, no, I don't really make roasts appointment viewing for me. So
I would check it out, but I didn't even know about it.
Check out De Niro.
I heard a lot of it was good, and then I heard, because somebody goes, well, hey, what about the fact that, we talked a little bit about the Shane Gillis thing going off the air yesterday about how he said some racially insensitive things about Asians on a podcast, and it's cost him a gig at Saturday Night Live. He got fired before he ever did an episode. And then on the roast with Alec Baldwin, Baldwin goes after, what's his name?
Lauren
from
Michael?
The Hangover. No.
Oh.
The Asian guy? Asian guy from The Hangover.
Ken?
Ken Jeong.
Yeah.
So he starts going after him, and of course it's all, he's like, he says something to the effect of, I know why you didn't like Glenn Ross. And if you think about it, it's because the L's and the R's and all that. And people were like, well, isn't this the same thing? Not really. At a roast, there's really no rules. You will see a lot of racially insensitive jokes, but you won't see anyone use, like, you're going to talk about stereotypes, but what you're not going to do, which where I think Shane Gillis made the big mistake, is to use racial slurs. Now, somebody like Lisa Lampanelli might, but she's probably the exception. But most guys, you're going to talk about, stuff that's racial. And we do it on this show. I mean, between us, Nick and I. But the difference is, Shane Gillis used a racial slur when he was doing it.
Yeah.
And we talked about the fact he would have been okay if he didn't. Alec Baldwin never really used a racial slur. And keep in mind, too, most of these jokes are written by other people. In fact, a guy we featured on the show, Matthew Broussard, was a writer for the show. And he's actually got a credit. And Radu Bhandar, our former intern who's on our promotions team, wrote some jokes for Nikki Glaser on the roast. So a lot of this stuff is written by a lot of people and vetted and all that. So it goes through a lot of different iterations before it makes air.
De Niro took a little bit of a shot at Robert Kraft.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, as part of that roast.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's interesting. And by the way, we mentioned it briefly, but when you talk about roasts and basically all bets are off, when Blake Griffin decided to get involved in the roast of Caitlyn Jenner...
That was actually funny.
Yeah, it was funny, but boy, he did not hold back. In terms
what
of,
was the joke you said about basically Caitlyn Jenner proves that none of the Kardashians like white penises or something like that?
Yes. Funny as hell.
Outstanding.
Well written.
Yeah, really well written.
Yeah,
joke.
I don't remember if we actually ran that one clip or not.
We did.
We had it. And so, yeah, if you are so inclined, go Google that one because Blake Griffin, who I guess is he wants to pursue a comedy.
Yeah.
So he took his shots there, and some of them were pretty funny.
We didn't get to it, so next segment we'll get to that question. If Tucker Astros. Keeps swinging the hot bat, do you keep Tucker and Straw and replace versus Diaz and Jake? So we'll get to that.
There you go. So Astros talk coming up next. By the way, they didn't play last night. They're going to play tonight. They're going to open up a series against the Texas Rangers at Minute Maid Park. Also, because you're Houstonians and sometimes you're busy and you're looking for a place to get away, but you just can't afford to leave town, well, now you can because the greatest place for a staycation is right here in Houston, and it's called the Houstonian. You guys have heard of the Houstonian before, but have you seen and really know about the Houstonian lately? Because it is unbelievable. It's a great place to feel like you've gotten completely away to a place out in the middle of just some of the most beautiful nature-esque type settings. And it's right here in Houston, Texas. 27 wooded acres, jogging trails, nature hikes, tennis courts, several swimming pools, and of course, four outstanding restaurants. It's all under the name of the Houstonian, which means you are going to get pampered. Your rooms are going to be deluxe. They're going to be spectacular. And you're going to feel like you were somewhere in a faraway land of paradise, but you're going to be right here in Houston, Texas. It's fantastic. They have 175,000 square foot health club on top of everything else. And you have your choice in terms of restaurants. Tribute is Tex-Lex because it's Texas, Louisiana, and Mexico cuisine. The Manor House, historic, the freshest Gulf Coast Creole cuisine. Arbor Grill, outdoor dining for hotel guests with a cool poolside vibe, and the bar open for lunch, dinner, light bites, and creative cocktails. The spa is out of this world as well. They're going to take great care of you. But check it out. The main thing is you don't have to leave Houston, and you get all of the finest amenities of an unbelievable resort. All you got to do is go to Houstonian.com. That's Houstonian.com. Let the video roll. You'll see what I'm talking about. The Houstonian is a remarkable destination. Get started right now at Houstonian.com.
Well, hello.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. Is the Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
90 in the books. That means 90 still to go. Second half of the show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Tuesday here in Houston. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel in the studio. Rolling along, having some fun, talking a lot about football with lots more to get to. But we also want to talk about some baseball. As I mentioned, Stroh's back at home for a brief series with the Texas Rangers to basically wrap up what, the Silver Boot?
The Silver Boot.
Because that's important. That's the hardware they're looking for.
Yeah.
But that starts tonight. Verlander on the hill, so that's encouraging, against a guy that from time to time has had some success against your Houston Astros and Lance Lynn.
So what is the Silver Boot record right now? 11-6 Astros, right?
I think so. They got off to a really bad start losing in Arlington.
It's already locked up. Yeah. They can lose twice and still secure the Silver Boot. And really, that's all that matters at this point. I mean,
breathe easy,
World
Houston.
Series, World Series.
Yeah, just breathe easy. You got the boot.
We got the Silver Boot. Everything else, it's gravy.
No doubt. So you said there was a question for us.
Yeah, excuse me.
On the text line.
Correct. Somebody texted in and said, if Tucker keeps swinging a hot bat, do you keep Tucker and Straw on the playoff roster versus Diaz and Jake?
I do not. I think there's other ways. Because of the fact that you're putting the two guys into the equation, I don't think that Diaz is so valuable. He plays first. He plays all the infield positions. He's a really good stick when you need him. I don't think there's any way he's not on the roster. No. Here we go. I mean, and he's also capable of hitting the ding dong. So if when he can go yard, yard with a ding dong when you need it,
big
timely ding dong. A timely ding dong is a big situation to come in clutch in. So I would say leave Diaz out of the equation. It's Straw or Mariznick in terms of your pinch runner. And then the other things, the intangible is, look, we all know the team loves Jake. His defense is off the charts. Offensively, you don't know what you're going to get from him. Straw gives you some versatility. But I think that you got to go with the guys that you already know and trust. And I think for that reason, out of the scenario he gave, Diaz and I believe Straw are both going to probably be a part of the postseason.
I'll say that there's probably an issue with the scenario he gave because it doesn't add up numbers-wise. When you look at what the Astros did last year, A.J. Hinch and the ALDS, he's going to go with a 4-man rotation and 7 in the bullpen. That's what he did last year. So if you assume that he's going with 11 pitchers, that leaves 14 position players. So let's count it backwards, all right? You got two catchers that you know are going to be carried.
Sure.
So that leaves 12. You've got the 4 infielders, so that leaves 8. Mm-hmm. All right, you got 3 outfielders, that leaves 5. You got Yordan at DH, that leaves 4 players on the bench. You know that those four bench players is going to start with Diaz because of the versatility, like you mentioned.
Right.
He loves Jake being able to put him in there in late inning situations for defensive purposes. That leaves 2 spots left. I think Miles Straw as a pinch runner, also as a defensive replacement. Don't forget, if something drastic were to happen and injuries, he could play shortstop as well. So I think Miles Straw. So now you've got 1 spot left. Who's that spot going to be? I think it comes down to Tucker and Toro. And remember, Toro can play first and third as well. Mm-hmm. So it depends but I think you've got 1 spot that's basically not
filled. I agree
with
you completely, and your analysis was not only spot on, but it was very eloquently put in short fashion. The biggest thing that I would say is who's got the hotter bat, because of the fact that if Tucker keeps hitting the way he's hitting, you're probably looking at a situational at-bat where you're going to need a hit or a sack fly. Mm-hmm. And I think that based on the way that they handle the bat at the plate right now, I would say Tucker would make it over Toro. But the bigger question then becomes, Barry, the health of Correa. Because if Correa's health continues to be...
If you missed it, I was watching a rerun and thought I was watching the Astros. That's when I knew that it was a rerun.
You saw him?
I flipped over and I was like, oh, Correa's back. Huh?
No, but funny you mentioned that. There's a chance he could be back tonight.
That would be good.
They said that he could be back starting tonight to get those major league reps, to get back to see, not only just for him to feel comfortable with his timing, but more so to see what they got. Because if he goes through the final 2.5 weeks of the season and he's still suffering with lingering effects of the back and whatever issues put him on the aisle this last time, then you got to be more concerned about your infield and say, we may have to lean more towards a Toro if we don't feel confident that he's 100% in Correa's case.
Yeah, the only thing that because basically the way I laid it out is you've got 1 slot you're trying to decide between Tucker and Toro, and the case that I would make for each is the following. 1, Tucker could play first base if you needed him to, but mostly he's an outfielder, right? Mm-hmm. Toro, we talked about, could play third. He could play first as well. I like Toro being a switch hitter. So you couldn't say, well, Tucker gives you a left-handed at-bat if you needed it late in the game as well as a pinch hitter, if you're going to go matchup to matchup. So does Toro. What I like, so Toro actually is a switch hitter. So if they do bring in a lefty, you want to bring in a righty, you could do that as well. Late in the game, that comes in real handy because then they can't match up. You can put in a switch hitter late in the game. That becomes an advantage for you. But Kyle Tucker has more pop. So if you're looking for an RBI guy that can drive the ball, that's going to be Kyle Tucker. So I think that's what A.J. Hinch has to weigh between the two to make that final decision.
There you go. So there you have it. There's your Astros breakdown.
Boom.
As the magic number is 4. So, foregone conclusion.
Is it 4?
I believe it's down to
2.
I think it's 4.
I thought with a win tonight and a loss by somebody that they clinch. I could be wrong.
Go ahead and look that up. I thought it was 4 when I was researching it this morning. But regardless, we know that the more important race that's going down to the wire is best record in baseball. Currently, that belongs to the Astros and the Yankees.
Yeah.
Both with the same record. So,
boy, it looked bad there for a while, too, where they were a couple games behind, and then Yankees lost a couple. Astros went on a little mini 3-game winning
streak. Series, we were all like, oh, boy, that could be problems. But then you saw the Yankees got even more injuries. They lost Sanchez, who's been a big stick in the middle of the lineup, and he's got a groin issue now as their starting catcher. I did that for you. So that's something to keep an eye on. And the Dodgers really have nothing to play for, but you know they're going to be right there till the end too. So we'll see how it all plays out as we continue to watch those two teams as what they do on a nightly basis, just like we see what the Astros do.
Cleveland is a game and a half back of the wild card. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at percentages of chances of making the playoffs, they have a 36.9% chance. Tampa has a 70.6% chance. Who do you think gets that spot? The A's are in. They have a 92% chance. I think the A's are a lock to get a wild card.
Well, I said the
A's. Who do you think?
I said the A's and the Indians. And boy, the Indians have just fallen off the planet lately to make that look less than stellar prediction by me. But I mean, in looking at it, I'd have
well,
to
I'm
look
saying,
at this.
I mean, but given those percentages, Indians with a 36% chance, Rays with a 70% chance, you think the Indians still make it? Or
no,
do you think
I don't. That's what I'm saying. I think I'm probably going to be SOL there, and I think that it's going to end up being the Rays and the A's,
which is surprising to me,
simply because of the fact that you know Cleveland has shown even after they made a few moves. That their pitching still was holding up, and that their lineup, they were enhancing their lineup. But a little surprising that they've fallen off the way they have.
Let's just jump to a conclusion here, since mm-hmm. we're talking baseball.
Yeah.
Who do you like in that matchup, A's and Rays, to represent the wild card?
The way they're playing right now, I don't bet against the A's. I just think the A's are playing really, really good ball. Their infield has just a ton of talent.
Yeah.
Their outfield is good defensively, as we know, with Laureano and those guys. But the fact of the matter is the A's are the hotter team right now, and I'd go with Oakland.
I'm with you. Yeah, I think here's a little bit of strategy involved.
No.
If you're the Astros, mm-hmm. and it looks like you have a chance of facing the wild card team, and you might, would you rather be the number one team and have to face the A's in the divisional round, or would you rather be the second team and have to face the Twins? Because I tell you what, I would much rather be facing the Twins in my first round of the playoffs than the A's. They scare me.
I wouldn't, simply because of the fact that when you think about the amount of power that's on a Minnesota team that has decent pitching, the fact of the matter is you could get, and again, for you to want to chart how many times I use fact of the matter.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. The bottom line is, I think that they could fluke into ways of beating you with the long ball, whereas from an Oakland perspective, I still don't believe they're starting pitching 1 through 3 or 4. And I think that the Astros are going to beat either one of those two teams. It's more important to me that they have home field against the Yankees, which I think is just inevitable to be the American League Championship Series. So I'll take the A's in the first round as opposed to the Twins.
Okay.
You go the other way?
Yeah, I think I'd face Minnesota like you talked about. I mean, that momentum going into the playoffs is a little scary for me with Oakland. And they're hitting on all cylinders. And I mean, not that the Astros did great. I think Minnesota won the series 4-3.
Yeah, they did.
And I think the Astros, the advantage is you get the A's at home, and you know you've beaten up on the division at home. And so that is the advantage. But I just feel like right now, when you got Minnesota, it was early in the season. For some reason, man, this A's team is, to me, the scariest team not named the Astros and Yankees right now in baseball, and especially going into the playoffs. Okay. I wouldn't want to face them.
Well, there you go. There's a brief synopsis of possible playoff matchups, as well as the Astros and the Rangers and Houston's possible playoff roster. So we'll continue to roll on. If you want to chime in on any of that, or you got a new topic you want to throw out, HR&P Listener Line, 713-780-3776. You can call, text, or hit us on Twitter. Back with more right here on ESPN 97.5. If I die, no, I live
to miss some bullets. ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, rolling through hour number 2, 3-hour show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. As we told you, if you ever miss any portion of the show, ESPN975.com, click on the show tab, top of the page, You can find the back hours there. You can also download the app while you're on the site. Therefore, you take us anywhere, everywhere, and you never miss a thing. Just so a small tidbit of information.
Yeah, if you texted at, I don't know, say 2:42 p.m. and said, hey, I'm tuning in late, guys, but have y'all talked about the chances of Jalen Ramsey to the Texans? Yeah, we did. Yeah. And you should just get on the app and go and listen to it. Because we're not going to repeat entire segments. In fact, we spent a couple of segments.
We sure did.
So hop on that app. Go check out the podcast. And
if you're an app hopper, that's the one to hop on.
Yeah. Did you hear? We didn't talk about it yesterday because we were so pro football centric. But right. Last week and this weekend, the Twitterverse was a little upset. Or I shouldn't say upset, but there were some back and forth about Tim Tebow and his comments about paying athletes and
college athletes.
College athletes, yes. He came out and he was very adamant about his position on how he perceived it and what he went into college as a player and what his motivation and thoughts were. And of course, he got crushed for it. So we'll discuss. But this is what Tebow said about paying athletes from his perspective.
I feel like I have a little credibility and knowledge about this because when I was at the University of Florida, I think my jersey was one of the top selling jerseys around the world. It was like Kobe, LeBron, and then I was right behind them, and I didn't make a dollar from it. But nor did I want to, because I knew going into college what it was all about. I knew going to Florida, my dream school, where I wanted to go, the passion for it, and if I could support my team, support my college, support my university, that's what it's all about. But now we're changing it from my university, from being an alumni where I care, which makes college football and college sports special, to then, okay, it's not about us, it's not about we, it's just about me. And yes, I know we live in a selfish culture where it's all about us, but we're just adding and piling it onto that, where it changes what's special about college football. Tim, we turn it into the NFL, where who has the most money, that's where you go. That's why people are more passionate about college sports than they are about NFL. That's why the stadiums are bigger in college than they are in the NFL, because it's about your team. It's about your university. It's about where my family wanted to go. It's about where my grandfather had a dream of seeing Florida win an SEC championship. And you're taking that away so that young kids can earn a dollar. And that's just not where I feel like college football needs to go.
That's fair,
there's that
man.
Opportunity in the NFL, that's but fair. Not in college football.
One of the big arguments, he was heated about
this. I was going to say, that's about as passionate and eloquent as I've ever heard Tim Tebow on TV.
One of the arguments that I saw repeated consistently was, well, Tim Tebow, you never had to miss a meal. You never grew up poor and had to worry about missing a meal and where your next meal was going to come from. So, of course, because of your privilege, you were able to just go play football and not worry about that. There are other people that don't have that luxury. There are other people that have to work to support their families. Counter argument to that was, hey, don't discount what Tebow has done for the poor and unfortunate, because he has been very philanthropic and donated a lot of his time and resources to helping the less fortunate. So that was essentially what happened over the weekend. So I just wanted to see your thoughts and get y'all's guys' thoughts on this, because I mean, we've talked about this subject ad nauseum on this show about Sure. Do you pay athletes or not. But I think it's a little bit different when you got a guy. I think it depends on, you know, what your perspective on life, on whether you think that they should be paid or not. I'm of the opinion that I don't care what your socioeconomic background was. If you are part of earning millions and billions of dollars for universities, you should get a cut of that pot,
sure.
Regardless of it. Now, he's very passionate about, oh, but you cheapen it. Oh, well, guess what? Welcome to the real world, Tebow.
That's what I can't get my mind past. I'm sitting here, you know, when this argument first started, I want to say this argument, this debate has been going on for at least 5, 6, maybe even 7 years.
It's a very long time.
That was about the only time I showed a little support for not paying a player. But ever since I really looked into it, probably for at least the past 5 or 6 years, I've always said pay the player. I can't sit there and tell somebody else who's made thousands and millions of dollars for their university because they sold their particular jersey and tell them, you know what, you don't deserve a cut of that. I can't look somebody in the eye and say that, because I know very well that if I was the reason why number, I don't know, 26 jersey on in any random program, in any college football team, college basketball team, if I was the reason why there were jersey sales, I would absolutely want a cut of it. So for me, if you're the reason why you're making money, if you're the reason why there's a sudden bump in revenue at your program, that person deserves a cut. That's just my personal opinion. So I disagree with him. I see why he's passionate, but I disagree with him.
So, yeah, we've had this conversation before. I take it all the way back to the Fab Five. And I say that, you know, I'm one of those people that say, look, if you were Tim Tebow and you were lucky enough to be brought up in a world where you never had to worry about money or fight for a meal or do those kind of things, then you don't know how everybody else feels in the first and foremost, okay? And look, I'm never going to discount his opinion because, you know, he did everything he said, and he obviously had one hell of a career, so he did it his way, and he has his opinions. But I think overall, the trade-off is the school is giving you a scholarship in exchange for your services on the athletic field. I think that's where the trade happens, okay? And I think that's fair. But I think that when you also, as a school, get to determine and control the likeness of your image, of your autograph, of all those different things, and you say, we get to control that too, you don't get that with the rest of the student body. You don't. There's not a single member of the student body elsewhere that can't sell their image and do and go out and make appearances and do
but
things.
But they're also
if
not
they
getting an education
do.
For free either.
But they're also not playing a sport for that university either. So my feeling is kind of like what Nick said too, in the standpoint is I think the trade is I'm giving you my athletic services for your athletic department. You're giving me a scholarship. You're giving me – and that's the trade. But that's where I think – that's where I draw the line. Anything above that where you're profiting in the millions of dollars in the case of Tebow or the Fab Five or things or in of that nature, I at least deserve a cut of that, if not – being able to control that. And that's why you're seeing the case that's being such a big issue in the state of California that's going to be a bigger issue nationally because the NCAA doesn't believe in what California is supporting, which is that these college athletes can control their own likeness and image and make money off
of it. I think there's obviously a solution to every problem. And some of it has to be compromised too, though. And I think both sides are going to have to compromise. For example, athletes can't go out and get a job, can they? There's a certain amount of money you can make as a moonlighting or having a job.
I mean, you can get a part-time job, but there's also little time for it with practice and
sure.
And schooling and lifting and all that.
Okay, but if you could get a part-time job, if you could have another source of income, if I could sell my autograph and not necessarily get paid to play or get paid for jersey sales, which are part of the NCAA and the football team. But if I could sell my autograph, if I could sell pictures of me at an appearance or whatever, how does that affect the school? So I think there has to be some compromise. Let them, we talked about with Johnny Manziel when he was in college and how big of a deal he was. If these kids want to go sell their autograph, sell it. It's your autograph. You've earned the right and the stardom. You became the star to be able to sell that. I don't see why that can't be a compromise. Somebody had another compromise that I really never thought of. And this is an interesting take on it. They said, why can't if colleges pay athletes, then say, yes, we'll pay you, but then you have to pay for your own school. So you can have your choice. You can get paid, whatever that becomes.
Because it doesn't
or
work.
Or you can get the scholarship.
The only reason why.
Or it gets deducted from your pay.
So for instance,
but not every player is going to make enough money to cover their scholarship.
Okay. But if you get a scholarship and you want to get paid, what about, okay, if you do want to sign up and say, yes, I want to be paid, then whatever you get in free education gets deducted from your pay.
Well, then you're going to have an agent because you're going to have to negotiate what you're getting paid.
Well,
I agree with what you said. That's what I was saying in the fact that take the merchandise out of it. But if you can control your own likeness and your own autograph, now we're probably leveling the playing field a little bit because when you talk about this and you talk about the issue of money being made, that's where it gets to me to where if you're going to control, you can't control everything about me. I think that you're right. I would say that because here's the other problem that's going to come up is just with Title IX and everything else, and we've seen this throughout these discussions, mm-hmm. is that if you pay everybody the equal amount, then the kicker and the volleyball team and all this other stuff is going to expect the same kind of things as every other player. And we all know, whether you want to agree to it equality-wise or not, that the best player on the football team or the basketball team is going to have a lot more value and should get a lot more because he's bringing a lot more than, say, the water polo team or the track and field team.
Which is why if you deduct it, if you have, if you have a scale, if you have whatever it is, revenue generated by sport – and then that gets divided, but you also allow these kids to make money off their likeness, off the field, off the court, on their own. so they can go to a to an autograph session and sign some cards for a couple grand, puts money in their pocket, allows them to eat, allows them over. There's my point is we're not going to solve this, obviously, and we get 1,000 texts as usual, sure. And we'll probably get 1,000 calls, and that's fine. At the end of the day, I think that this is like any situation. No one wants to compromise. The NCAA doesn't want to compromise. The athletes are mad, and they don't want to compromise necessarily. But at the end of the day, that's the point. You've got to come up with a compromise. If from an athlete's perspective, you're saying, I'm making you money. Why can't I have a cut of that? And you're the NCAA saying, well, you get a cut because of your scholarship. Then there's some middle ground to be had there. They just have to figure out what that is.
Look, and you're right. We're not going to solve this. There's probably a bunch of ways that some people have considered. Look, you could look at the UFC model where there's one sponsor that represents basically the entire roster of UFC fighters, and you get a check based on likeness, based on popularity, based on what you bring to the table. I don't know if you can employ something like that at the college football level, but that might be something they need to consider. But you do have to quantify, in my opinion, how much each player brings to the table. Yeah. And that's what makes it so difficult.
And that's where I was going. That's why I said what I said. Because of Title IX, because of the whole thing of one player being more valuable than another player because of their abilities and what they've done, that's where you can police this appropriately by saying, hey, look, let them go out and make their own appearances. Let them go out and do their own autograph signings, because that's how you're going to weed it all out. Because I don't think that the Dick Sporting Goods down the street is going to sign the water polo team to sign for an hour and a half, but they are going to sign the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And so that's how you can do it without having to get in the weeds and really get down to all the Title IX and all the other, who's better than what on what sports.
Because, hey, if you play water polo and you can get money for your autograph off the pool, I was going to say field or court, but out of the pool, good for you. Go get it.
Absolutely.
But you know what? And when you are Deshaun Watson at Clemson and you are one of the best football players in the country, you're going to that autograph is going to be more in demand than Bobby Smith, the water polo captain.
But let's also not discount the fact that
Bobby Smith still gets an education.
If you got a pool company down the street or a showroom,
there you go.
And they're a big supporter of the water polo team at Stanford, and they want the best water polo team, hey, don't cut that guy off from making money. If there's an opportunity and you can find a niche, let him do it.
Yeah. And that is weird, too, though. I wonder if all the scholarships are all the same, though, right? Like, I realize that the benefits that the football players have as far as facilities might be a little better than some of the others. But the scholarship amount is the same whether you play water polo or football, because the education costs
the
same. Yeah,
just the amount of book, you know, book money, what that's you get all in the terms same, of though, book. Right? Yeah, it's all the same. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Hey, guys, if you haven't got Get Upside yet, you're going to be interested in that, I promise you. And I was looking at the app, and if you are out in the Highway 6 West Park Tollway area, pay attention to me. Well, this is just an example, right? So if you don't know what Get Upside does, it gets you cash back for the stuff that you're already buying, like gas and food, right? So I thought, well, let me just take a look at a random area of town and see what offers are in this area. So I'm out here at the Highway 6 and West Park area. Burger King and Wendy's, 20% cash back on all your purchases. Dunkin' Donuts, 25% cash back on all your purchases. Could you imagine you get up one morning, you go to Dunkin' Donuts, you spend 10 bucks on donuts, you get 25% of that back. You go out to lunch, whether it's a Burger King or Wendy's, you spend 10 bucks, you get 25% of that back. You could be doing this every time if you're using GetUpside. That's how cool this app is. So if you haven't downloaded it yet, do yourself a favor right now and go to your app store. iTunes and Google Play both have it. It's all one word. Just type in GetUpside and install it. And once you install it, it takes a couple seconds to set up. It's really easy. Put in my promo code Barry, B-A-R-R-Y. And then when you do your first fill up, you're going to get a bump, like a little extra cash back from that promo code, just to kind of get you started. Then I tell you all the time, my wife got 30 cents a gallon cash back. Other people are getting up to like $7. And you could be getting more. It just depends on what offers are in your area. And the way this works is just what I told you. I have decided, let's pick an area of town. So you have a map inside of GetUpside. You pull up that map, and then you say, all right, I'm looking for food or I'm looking for gas. And it shows you all of the deals in your area. And you can pick and choose what deals you want to take advantage of. So if Burger King has a better deal right now than Wendy's, well, you know where to go, all right? But all that money is available to you, and these companies want your business. That's why they offer you the deals through GetUpside. But you can't get these deals, and you can't get this cash back without GetUpside. So go download it right now. Put in my promo code Barry. Start getting that cash back, and thank me later.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.